Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
The world is full of light, with suns and moons all over the place.
Well, greetings, everybody. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you what the name of that song is or what show it is from. Welcome to Behind the Curtain, our podcast on WGN Plus. This is Paul Listening from WGN TV, and that, of course, is the gorgeous music from West Side Story, which has been around for a long time, well, probably about 60 years, but it is now at the Lyric Opera House being performed like it's never been performed before, with an incredible cast and an incredibly visual and emotional experience that you will not want to miss. This has gotten such incredible reviews from absolutely everybody, including myself, that I wanted to talk to the leads of this show and have them talk a little bit about being here in Chicago. Joining me is Tony. He plays Tony. His name is Corey Cott. He's been on Broadway in Bandstand, where I've seen you, Corey, and Newsies, and such great roles, and now he really is playing one of the big key roles of all times, and also Michaela Bennett. And Michaela, welcome to you, because you play Maria. You come from a bit of a different background, I mean, as opposed to kind of that traditional Broadway thing, lots of concerts and orchestral work. Do I have that right, Michaela?
You're right, yeah. I grew up as a theater kid, but ended up, my ticket into New York was at Juilliard. I studied opera there, but have been doing a lot of music theater in New York, as well as a lot of concerts around the world, which is very exciting.
And you've really just been exciting critics and audiences just left and right. And Corey, let me ask you, and you're playing, obviously it's an iconic show, it's an iconic role. What is it like to be in a show? I mean, this was actually probably the best West Side Story I've seen since I was in my high school performance, which I think might have topped you, but that's my opinion. And you can laugh at that because we didn't top you, but oh, but I was a mean shrank. But talk to me about what it's like stepping into a role. How affected are you by all the folks who have played this role in the past? Did you care?
To be honest, not really. I mean, it respectfully, I think that's like the. There's, I guess, many different ways you can approach playing an iconic character. You can, one of those ways is, you know, pay attention and watch all the previous versions and kind of steal things from them. But I didn't really do that. I kind of wanted to bring as much of my own self to Tony as possible. I've also been, in a lot of ways, I feel like I've been primed for Tony in a lot of ways. A lot of the roles I've played in my career so far have been similar to Tony, in terms of being either former leader or leader of a group of people, trying to rally a bunch of people to do something, and then discovering love or battling emotional trauma or love in that way. So, like, there's a theme in a lot of ways with the characters that I've played in my career that seem to line up perfectly with Tony. So I tried to lean into that as well, but also just bring my own playfulness and youthfulness and the joy that, and also the youth, especially the youth that I think sometimes can get lost in West Side Story. Michaela and I have talked about this a lot, like the idea that, you know, it's the most romantic, based on the most romantic story of all time. These two people fall in love over the course of 48 hours, and how it can just, the trap of it is just, yeah, to play the romance of it rather than play like the actual idea that they're 18, 19 year olds falling in love in 48 hours, and how that can be, it's beautiful and sweeping and heartbreaking, but it also can be awkward and goofy, and they're teenagers and they haven't experienced the full span of life yet, and so there's so many other colors that we've tried to throw in there aside from just the traditional romance and sweeping melodies that can easily trap trap actors, I think.
And you do that. So, you know, I had never thought about the fact that you're right, because as Jack Kelly and Newsies, I had Alan Menken on the show a few weeks back, by the way. People can go back and listen to that interview.
Oh, amazing.
But he's he was in Chicago. I produced his show over at our auditorium theater here. But anyway, that said, you're right. You've been kind of a gang leader. So now I'm going to think of other shows for you to do where we have gangs and make sure you get cast as the lead in all those. Michaela, I'm going to go kind of to the music piece of this. You know, a score by Bernstein, lyrics, the first lyrics generally that we know of, written by Stephen Sondheim and the Arthur Lorenz libretto. I mean, it is so amazing that those folks got together in the 50s and did this. Talk to me about singing this score, because your background is so much from music, even more than the Broadway show. Do you kind of get lost sometimes in the music you're singing?
You know, I think the music is perfect, and it makes it easy as an actor to have the impulses that we want and need to have when we're doing a show. So that being said, I mean, as overwhelming as it is, it's a joy to perform it every night. You hear things differently every time you hear it because it's so grand, and you really get to play as an actor, as a singer, every single time you're working on this piece. It's really a joy, and it's really, I think, a gift to everyone to be able to perform and use it to the most ability that we can.
And you guys had a special night. This may be more special for people like me who actually remember the original film. Although I didn't see the original production on Broadway, but you had Carol Lawrence, the original Maria from Broadway, at your performance. I think it was last week or so. Corey, what kind of impact did that have on you guys to have the original Maria come visit with you?
It was really cool. It was very exciting. I've been fortunate to originate parts on Broadway now, and to be able to actually perform for the person that created it is a very surreal experience. I haven't yet had that yet where someone has performed the stuff that I've created on or been a part of creating on Broadway, and I'm sure when I do, it'll be a very, very, surreal on the other side of the table experience. But it was just amazing to hear. I mean, she came backstage after and started just spewing stories of calling Jerome Robbins Jerry and Leonard Bernstein Lenny and like, oh, you're on a first name nickname basis with those people. That's insane. But Maria's probably top five most iconic female musical theater roles of all time, and to be able to have that as her what she's known for is incredible. So she, we only had about 5-10 minutes backstage, but even in those 5-10 minutes, her knowledge about the show and her asking questions about our production and her commentary was very, very, very fascinating.
Well, I'm sure.
And
Michaela, let me ask you, Michaela, did you know she was coming, or did you find out afterwards?
I did. I found out the day before, so I kind of mentally prepared myself for that. But it was very exciting, and I was very, very happy to have her there and be able to meet her after. Her energy was amazing.
So you guys are kind of young, so I'm going to, Michaela, give you a little test question with this. This comes from the old Broadway hat here, but do you know who Carol Lawrence was married to for so many years?
I don't.
Corey?
Uh-oh.
No, I have no clue.
Okay, see, the price of youth. She was married to Robert Goulet, who was, of course, original in Camelot and so many. So they both come with this incredible Broadway background. Her husband passed away some years ago, but another incredible Broadway talent as well. Here you are. And by the way, we got to give a shout-out. Michaela, I'll come to you for this first. They're fellow leads, but supporting cast. Amanda Castro is Anita, and Brett is Riff, and Manuel is Bernard. You are just surrounded by an incredible ensemble. This does the stage, as I wrote in my review, the stage always full with people, with music, with sound. It's just amazing. I'm guessing you guys really get along all that well, Michaela.
We have a family backstage, and I think Amanda is incredible, and we had an instant connection, kind of like how I felt with Corey when we first met. And I think it's really important to be able to feel so comfortable with somebody on and off stage. I really, really trust her, and I think she's a beautiful performer. We have an incredible full cast of all different types of people just like that, and I think that we're really lucky. And I think it shows through the production that we all really trust each other, and you can't ask for anything more as an actor.
No, I agree with that. Corey, the one thing, you know, when I think of traditional musicals, I might be wrong about this, but generally at intermission time, we go off with the whole cast. I don't care, you know, Les Mis, Miss Saigon, whatever it is. There's a sort of like a lot of people on stage and big brash sounds in it, and people are happy and we're kind of looking forward to the drama that's going to happen in Act Two. And of course, at the end of the show, somehow things have worked themselves out and we're all happy again and ending the show. That's not true with West Side Story. Of course, obviously based on Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Both at the intermission, where, you know, we have the rumble has just, I'm not ruining anything for people, but where the rumble has just happened and you have that drama and the end of the show could not be more sad. What is your take on doing a show where indeed there's so much sadness, but the audience has to kind of, for the curtain call, which is so dramatic and so strong for you guys, you have to bring us back out of that emotion, right? And make sure we're okay again.
Oh man, it's definitely an interesting proposition by this team, especially in this time when it first premiered. It's hard to take the show in a lot of ways when it was created out of the context. I mean, you think about the year that it premiered on Broadway. Music Man won the Tony for Best Musical, and which is, you know, maybe the most iconic musical comedy, one of the most iconic musical comedies of all time. So, and that, thinking about that in the same season as West Side Story, which is arguably the most dramatic musical of all time, it just speaks quite highly about the state of American musical theater at the time, but also how it's grown since then. And I think at the time it was very avant-garde and almost dangerous to make a musical about a tragedy. And you can see if you go throughout the years and decades after that, how that became much more of a common thing to experience, because I think there's this idea that people want to come to the theater to escape and to be entertained. But I think people also really want to be challenged and to come and experience a story and hopefully leave. It's one thing Carol Lawrence said, you come to this theater to experience something and hopefully leave a different or better or challenged or changed person in some way. And I think West Side Story has been doing that for 60 years. So to speak about what my opinion is of that, I think it's incredible. I mean, I agree with her. I would hate to go see something and not feel like a different person afterwards. I think that might be a test of what's maybe good and what's bad. But I know people come see this show, and no matter if it's done excellently and pursued with, you know, the right people, that they will leave feeling something and feeling different and feeling moved. And that's the purpose of art and in my opinion of this piece.
Yeah, well said. And Michaela, you know, this is the original show that we're seeing, the original music. I don't see any changes. And yet you guys appear, not you guys actually, but a couple of other cast members, Bernardo and Anita, appeared on our weekend morning show. And so I got a closer look, although my seats were very good when I saw it. But what I didn't see was that in Maria's bedroom, the pictures on the wall, we have Ricky Martin. Oh, actually that I did see. But there's Justice Sonia Sotomayor is on the wall. Now that would tell me that there was an effort here to have this be a almost modern day current piece, but the show isn't. Michaela, can you shed any light on those kinds of upgrades that kind of modernized it? I mean, I caught that, and I don't know if there was anything else.
Yeah, I think that the piece is supposed to be set in a modern day. I don't think there's an exact date, but I think what that is trying to say is that when this piece was written, there were issues that were at hand, and we're still dealing with those same issues today and throughout that time. So I don't think that there's like a distinct date. I can't think of anything else other than those kind of time capsules in my room that make, and maybe the costumes, but yeah, I don't think that there's a set date, but it's definitely set in some sort of modern time span.
Oh, and Corey, I did want to ask you this. I don't think there were any changes to the music. However, there was one thing that I noticed, and that was in the song "Something's Coming." It seemed that the last couple of lines of that song, at least the night I saw it, were cut and moved on. Was that a change, or was that my imagination?
It's not your imagination. We're actually doing what's written on the page. There came a part, I think the movie was the first time that, I'm guessing you're talking about the maybe tonight.
Yes,
where
correct.
He goes up to the A.
Correct.
correct. Yeah, that's actually not written in the score. And so we talked about that the first couple of days. I said, I want to do what as Carol would say, what Lenny wrote. and I actually think leaving it on the maybe tonight on the lower note, in my opinion, presents a suspenseful ending to the song rather than a traditional kind of button. Because the idea is that he's not discovered what's coming yet. It's still, he goes through this thoughtful journey of like, maybe it's going to be this, maybe it's going to be this, maybe it'll come like this, but I ultimately haven't figured it out yet. And I'm still figuring it out until I see Maria. So in my opinion, I think it actually dramatically works better, I guess I could say that, hot take, to further the plot along. And I know that's not what has been traditionally done over the years, but I actually like what he wrote. And yeah, so we leaned into the score.
Okay, well, I'm glad, as I said, I did notice that, but you're right, and it may only be for mostly Broadway recording, or I should say people who cover the song who had to find a different way to end it. Maybe that's where it came from. It just stuck in my head, so thanks for that explanation. It makes total perfect sense. Before we wrap, Mikhail, I just want to ask you, so now that you here you are in a so-called kind of traditional Broadway setting, if you will, only in a grand sense, is this the direction for you now? Is this like Broadway, here I come, and what's my next role? Or is it, I'm going to go back to the sort of the concerts and the symphonies?
You know, I hope to do it all. Growing up, my dream was to be on Broadway, and it still is. And I'll still definitely be working towards that. But I want to have an open door for many different types of things. I have some concerts lined up this summer. I actually head to St. Louis to perform as Cinderella in Cinderella at the Muni. But I want to keep my options open and have an artistic career that has many different opportunities in store for it.
That you will have. And Corey, people should know, West Side Story at the Lyric, this is not traveling around the country. It's here, you're done. What's next up for you?
Oh, yeah. We're done in 2 weeks, so come and get your tickets. I am, like Mikhail, I'm doing some concerts this summer. I'm actually going to do a concert with Cheetah Rivera.
Oh, I love
enough,
her.
Ironically enough, in Kansas City in the end of June. And then after that, I'm actually going to moving to New Orleans to shoot a TV show for Fox that is going to premiere in early 2020. And it's called Filthy Rich. And I'll be living in New Orleans and shooting down there for about six, seven months. And then after that, I'm not exactly sure. But more Broadway experiences, and yeah, we'll see.
I'm not worried about you. I think you're going to have stuff to come. By the way, Cheetah Rivera is fabulous. You just triggered a quick story for me. But I was at an after party after an opening one night. It was before I was doing journalism. I was doing other things. And I was just sitting in a chair. And Cheetah came in, and all of these press were bothering her, and she didn't want to deal with them. She walked over to me. Literally, I was nobody. She walked over to me and said, "Yo, come here. Come with me." And she took me into a back room of this restaurant bar area. We sat down. She said, "I want to talk to you." And I said, "Cheetah, I'm not with this." She goes, I know you're not. That's why I want to talk to you. I just want to sit with you." And her manager came up and said, "Cheetah, can I get you a drink?" She said, "Yes." And he looked at me and said, "You want something?" I said, "Why, yes. Let me. And I spent all evening with her. And it was just so great. She didn't want to deal with the she just wanted a quiet night. It was a huge mistake on her part picking me back there. But anyway. But we had
That's amazing.
A great time.
That's amazing.
And, oh, yeah. So enjoy her. So Corey Cott, Michaela Bennett, the show is West Side Story. It's at the Lyric Opera House only through June 2nd. I'm sending everybody there that I've met. Everybody calls, what shows do you recommend? And this is it. I mean, Dean Richards, my colleague here, Chris Jones, there isn't anybody that hasn't said, get over and see one of the best portrayals of West Side Story since Paul Lisnick was in it at Niles North in 1975. And but other than that, it was one last, I know, one last reference. I had to do it. But guys, you are fabulous. Thank you for your time. Congratulations. And once again, you don't want to miss West Side Story at the Lyric Opera House, an experience you will not have anywhere else or probably ever again when it comes to this show. It plays through June 2nd. Tickets at lyricopera.org. And Corey Cott, Michaela Bennett, you're fabulous. Enjoy Chicago. Break legs for the rest of your run. And if you don't mind, we're going to go out now listening to you two guys sing the beautiful song Tonight.
Tonight, tonight.
Kids move out. Isn't it time to let him go?
No, 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 I'm alive. I'm alive. I'm so alive. If you climb on my back, then we both can't fly. If you try to deny me, I'll never die. Alive. So alive. I'm alive. Yeah, yeah. I'm alive. I'm alive. So alive. I'm alive.
Well, and we move on from West Side Story to another fantastic show that's in the Chicago area, Next to Normal. That was music by Tom Kitt and lyrics by Brian Yorkie. I love this show. I love that song and wanted to open with it. And so I'm joined now by the cast and associate director of the show that is playing up at Writers Theater in Glencoe. It is worth the ride if you live in the city, and it is playing through June 16th. You don't want to miss it. Next to Normal. Joining me is the leads in the show, Keeley Vasquez, who plays the mom, Diana Goodman. Hi, Keeley.
Hi, Paul.
We, of course, I got to plug this. We, of course, worked together at the Porch Light Theater when we did New Faces of 1964. And you just as a director, just dealt with me. And then also,
Paul, you were great.
And also joining us, young in his career, Liam O, who plays the son, Gabriel Goodman. Hey, Liam, good to meet you.
Hi, it's so nice to talk to you.
And Harmony France, the associate director of the show. The show itself was directed by David Cromer. It's a name you should know because he won the Tony for directing A Band's Visit, which is on its way to Chicago in not too long. But Harmony, you're a great director. You worked with a great director. It was a nice challenge for you to take on this role, I assume.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, David's been probably my favorite director for quite a while. We actually know each other from Columbia College. I was an actor in one of his shows there, so that's how we got to know each other. And when this opportunity came up, I knew I couldn't pass it up.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. Keeley, let me come to you to talk a little bit about the plot of the show. You play the mom. This, by the way, I got to tell you, I mean, I've seen you perform in some things. You are amazing in this role. And my review said so. And other reviews I'm reading are really just highlighting you. You too, Liam. But Keeley, that people are just looking at your performance. It is knock your socks off. So what do you want listeners to know about what Next to Normal is about?
You know, I think there are a lot of things that people can say the show's about. You know, you can look at it from the character of Diana, or her husband Dan. In the end, I think what we did with the show, I mean, that I love is that it's a show about a family. It's a show about decent people trying to make good decisions and not necessarily always failing, but coming up against problems like we do in life. And it's a beautiful story about a family that truly loves each other and is trying to win,
in a very difficult situation. Diana was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and the challenges that that creates for the family. Obviously, you can imagine that they're plentiful. It's not just one problem, and so it's just a story about a family is the best way that I can describe it.
Yeah, and here's what I'm going to say. And the reason I pose that question to you, because I'm going to let listeners know, there are some surprises and things that we are not going to talk about.
Right.
That if we do, they sort of dampen the impact of some of the elements of the show, which are sort of a, oh, wow, moment here and there.
There are several of them.
There are several
of them.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And so I'm doing my best, and we're all going to do our best to avoid those. I'm simply going to tell listeners that as much as we're frustrating you now by not telling you, that's why you need to see the show, because see it, and then you can send me an email that says, now I get it, and I see why you couldn't talk about this stuff, which will take me to Gabe, the character Gabe, Liam. First of all, Liam, I got to tell you, you're a young dude, man. You are. I mean, I think you're young. You're at Northwestern University. This is your Porchlight Theater debut. Talk to me about the challenge of taking on the role of Gabriel. It's a complex role. There's a sister you deal with. Mm-hmm. There's mom. Mm-hmm. There's dad. All sorts of people you got to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I was very lucky to have like the amazing cast and creative team to help like kind of guide it along. And I think that what we tried to do with Gabe specifically is just to really just honor the fact that he is, you know, a 17-year-old boy and what that means, and having to deal with, you know, a family that in a lot of ways doesn't see him, and he has a great relationship with his mom, but his relationship with his dad and his sister is complicated, to say the least. And I think that that's something, despite the fact that in Next Normal, the circumstances might be slightly out of the ordinary, I think that's something that anyone can relate to and kind of grab onto, is just family is complicated. And as much as you love people, those relationships can be strained and they can be complex and they can be hard to navigate. So I think that that was something that really grounded it for me, and I'm so grateful that the whole creative team was really just really, really helped parse through the complex nature of this story together.
And by the way, one more follow-up to that. I saw the role on Broadway played by Aaron Tveit. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, how familiar were you with his work in this role, or listened to him on the cast recording? Did you familiarize it, or just kind of do your own thing?
Well, the crazy thing is that that song that you played at the beginning, I'm Alive, was the first song I ever sang in an acting class, just when I was like 11 years old. So this role has been with me for a long time. I mean, yeah, it's been a dream to play it. And I think that, Aaron Tveit kind of was very iconic in this role, and I loved his interpretation of it. But I think that obviously, tried to wipe that from my memory as much as I could, which is a little impossible, but
you made the role your own, obviously. And by the way, check out his concert at 54 Below, where he opens with that number. That'll blow you away too. But yeah. Harmony, let me ask you, and let me invite you to talk a little more directly in the phone. It was a little bit off on the first interaction with you, so it's probably just a phone thing. But here's the thing: that my take on this production, this directing of Next to Normal, it is different than what I saw on Broadway. It seems more raw to me. Is that just because I have a fading memory, or am I right that you guys have done some different things with this than the original production?
No, you're definitely correct in that. When I saw it, I saw the opening night of the tour. And again, all the respect to the original production, but I remember watching it and being like, I can't wait to see the Chicago version of this production. And I think that's what this is. I think this is just, it's all about honesty. And like Keila was saying before, we're just really trying to ground it. But this is such a universal story. There is no one that isn't touched by some sort of tragedy in their lives. So I think that it's really, really relatable. But I think the way that David Cromer approached it, and the way that we all approached it, is to kind of take the sheen away. It's not as shiny. It's not as commercial. We really wanted it to look like real people up there. And I think you definitely succeeded in that.
To me, there's a staircase that's part of the set, and it's just almost this magical. It's almost as magical. It is such a home for everybody to sit. And in fact, Keeley, when we go out of this interview, I'm going to play a song that you do as you sit on those stairs and in that staircase. But you know, sort of curious because look, I've seen you in roles like Merrily We Roll Along and In the Heights, and I know Barry Manilow is your best friend. You toured the world with him, but. This Barry, I don't know how Barry would feel watching you do this. He'd be, Keeley, what are you doing? But I'm sort of curious, it has to be a challenge playing, as you said, she's got difficulties with you know, substance abuse, that kind of thing. Some incredible scenes with Gabriel Ruiz, Gabe, who's a friend of mine, who plays Dr. Madden and Dr. Fine. What was that a challenge, having to take on those roles? Because, you know, there are people in the audience who I'm sure are dealing with those issues in their family.
Absolutely. You know, one of the biggest things that made us, you know, that opened everybody up about this is that a lot of us are medicated. A lot of people need some kind of medicine to get through the day, to not have anxiety, to not have panic attacks, and then the list gets greater than that. You know, so understanding that, you know. This is something that is wildly relatable, though we don't talk about it that much, makes it, it's not something that I have to play at. It's something I understand on a smaller level, not as big as Diana has to deal with it. But, you know, and it does raise the question of as how we, you know, how we deal with medication in our country, how we, you know, and for those listening, once you see the play, you know, we do everything. We do talk therapy. We take the drugs. We do all the things. It's not like we're just throwing medication willy-nilly. But it is, you know, the challenge is to be as honest as possible in every moment, because I am telling a story that is more universal than people might think it to be, and I want to make sure that I'm honoring those who suffer the way that Diana does.
Liam, when I think of, you have an interesting relationship with your sister, who's played by Kyrie Corder in the show, her boyfriend, Alex Levy, but I'm not even sure we can talk about that relationship, but there is one. But my question is, so I'm curious, sort of offset, or as you got ready for this role, you know, sometimes actors get together, they kind of build on the relationship they're going to have. This would have been weird for you.
Yeah, it would have for sure. The thing that's great is that, I mean, I think this show in particular would have been very difficult to do without people you trust without question every time you're on stage. And luckily, this entire cast has been just absolutely incredible. I think when we all finally got together and started rehearsals and met up, there was just kind of an instant connection between us that we all felt we were like, you know, we're all telling the same story. We all know what we're trying to do. We're all working towards a common goal. And luckily, you know, it's great that I have to pretend to like these people less than I actually do on stage, you know, so, which is I think a great, great problem to have, because I have loved working with them for every moment of this process.
I'm not going to ask Keeley whether she really likes you, because that we don't have to.
But the lovely part of that, Paul, honestly, is just that he plays like kind of this all-American hero, got a kid, and he's better than that in real life. So don't get me started on the emo.
Hey, thanks, Mom.
That's great. And Harmony, I also wanted to ask you, you know, this show almost plays like it's in the round. I mean, the Writers Theater, which is a new building, it's only a couple of years old, I think, is such an amazing theater that you're in. But did you almost direct it as though it's in the round? Because you work with the space, you work with the, you know, avenues out of the aisles, out of the theater. What was that decision between you and David?
Sure. It's definitely, it's called a thrust, but it's close. Yeah, it's close to being in the round. So the way David approaches staging is unlike anything I've ever seen. He doesn't really obey the rules, which I actually love. So there's a lot of really unconventional staging. Sometimes the actors' backs are to the audience, but that's because the other side can see them. So it's just a matter of balancing it and making sure that every side gets, you know, their money's worth. But also, it's such a beautiful space, and there's all these, like, aisles and vans and corners, and David likes to use every bit of space that he has available to him. So, yeah, it's especially I think Liam gets to go.
Yeah, Liam really gets to explore
more
the set.
Faces on stage than anyone else.
I love it. Well, and part of what I wrote in my review is to say, you know, this show ends on a note of hope. You will leave the theater humming. That's important to me. If I'm going to see something that's a musical, I want to walk out and be able to remember something that I just heard within the last couple of hours. Mm-hmm. That's why songs like I'm Alive come into play. And but also is such a show of raw emotion by you guys that it's just an amazing show. I want to encourage everybody to catch Next to Normal at Writers Theater. It's playing through June 16th. Writers Theater, spelled the proper way, the English way, T-R-E at the end, writerstheater.org. I hope they taught you that, Liam, in acting school. T-E-R is just so plebeian. You just don't want to do that. Anyway, writerstheater.org. Up at Writers Theater. It's just amazing. Keely Vasquez, you're amazing as always. Liam, really impressed with you. I'm going to have fun watching your career as it continues. And Harmony France, just what a great job directing this show. I want to encourage everybody. We're going to go out with a song, picture Keely on a staircase, I mean, and singing this beautiful number that is just one of the many beautiful numbers in this show. And it's called I Miss the Mountains. Thank you guys for joining me. Don't miss Next to Normal. Here we go. Here's Keely. And for our final segment today, I want you to meet a couple of friends of mine. We actually all went to school together, which is not why they're on this show, because I would have them on regardless of that. It's because of an effort they're making, and it's an effort with a very personal reason behind it. Joining me now, Brian and Lori Andre. Lori, you may know because she owns a very popular shoe store in the city, although waiting for you to make shoes for me, Lori. But anyway, welcome to the welcome to the podcast, both Lori and Brian. Today we're talking about an event or a week-long event called You Shop, We Give. It's really a campaign from May 18th through May 25th. Lori, talk to me a little bit about what this campaign is going to be, what you want folks to do, because you've got over 70 businesses ready to help you. We'll talk about what is personal about it in a moment.
Okay. Well, during the week, there are approximately 70 Chicagoland and suburban stores that are participating in our initiative, You Shop, We Give, where they'll be donating 1% of their sales for that week to four organizations in the Chicagoland area. So one is IMALS. The second one is the Les Turner ALS Foundation. The third one is MDA, Chicago Chapter, and ALSA, Chicago Chapter. And basically, Brian and I have spearheaded this initiative to not only raise awareness, but to raise much-needed funding for research.
And it's a good thing you're doing it in May, because May is a special month when it comes to ALS.
Yes, it's Awareness Month for ALS.
Brian, one of the reasons behind this is very personal. Again, we've all gone to school together, so it was difficult news for us all to hear. But talk a little bit about what has probably triggered this very personal interest for you and Lori when it comes to wanting to do research and get a cure for ALS.
Oh, that's easy. In the fall of 2016, I myself was diagnosed with ALS. And we met another young couple, Brian and Sandra Wallach, at a fundraising campaign for a fundraising gala, actually. You hosted this year's version of it, the Les Turner Gala.
Right.
And we got.
And I'll be back next year,
them.
By the way.
Yeah, great. Oh, that's fantastic. Uh-huh. We got to talking with them, and we decided that we need to start our own foundation, I Am ALS, which is a patient-driven, patient-centric foundation. We're searching for funding for a cure for ALS. We're raising awareness. That's what we're all about.
Yeah, and we're also working on legislation as well. So Brian Wallach, our founder, has been very active on the Hill in recent weeks, actually.
And I think part of it is because, well, there's lots of reasons for it. ALS gets some attention, but people need a better understanding of what this disease really is all about. And Brian, There's none of this in your family, right? Some people think, well, I don't have that disease in my family. It doesn't work that way.
No, no. 90% of ALS cases are completely sporadic. There's no known reason for why they arise. It can hit anyone, anytime, any age. And we're dealing with that now in the research, trying to find out what some of these causes are. But right now, really, anyone is at risk, anyone and everyone.
And Lori, without too much detail, I don't want to turn all sad with this, but talk a little bit about what ALS is for people who they've heard of it, because it's known commonly as Lou Gehrig's disease. But what does it do? Brian has been really fortunate and lucky so far, and I'm sure that will continue. But what is it that many families face?
Well, I think when you're given the diagnosis, you realize that ALS is a terminal diagnosis. We aim to change that, obviously. I think that for most families and most people who are given the diagnosis initially sort of are in shock, and they really don't know, where to turn to other than, speaking with their doctors. But I feel that for us, we're hopeful, and we were able to research and get great information from various doctors and researchers throughout the country that are really there advocating for us and give us a real sense of hope that someday there will be a cure. So for us, we don't think ALS is an incurable disease. We just think it's an underfunded disease.
And so you've got over 70 stores so far who are participating in this. Again, May 18th to May 25th. What you want us to do, those who are not store owners, is to find a store that has a You Shop, We Give logo. I imagine this will be a poster, something in the window, so we know when we see it. And what will that store be giving? How much will they be giving?
So, yes, all the stores are going to be displaying the posters, but you can also go to our site, which is www.imals.org/you-shop, where you can find a complete listing and a map where all the stores are located in the Chicagoland area. So we're encouraging everybody to go out and shop during the week. And support not only local businesses, but know that you're doing good also for people and with the disease and caregivers. And know that these stores are donating 1% of their sales, which is a huge deal. And we're really so thankful that everybody has sort of welcomed us with open arms and are really supportive for our efforts.
By the way, I do want to mention Lori's Shoes, which you own. You actually have designed an ALS fundraising shoe, right? Let's just give a shout out for that.
So we did. We worked with one of our manufacturers who helped us design and manufacture a shoe. It's called the Strikeout ALS shoe, which we sell in our stores, and we give 50% of our proceeds that will go actually to the Les Turner ALS Foundation. Those proceeds will go directly to them.
And Brian, you're going to work with Lori to make sure she develops a man's version of that shoe eventually, right?
I'm doing what I can for you, Paul. What can I say?
Because Lori, you got at least one pair sold when you make that shoe. I just want you to know that.
Yeah, I know. I'll send it to you, Paul.
All right. Brian and Lori Andre, congratulations on the work that you're doing. Brian, every best wish for just decades of continued great health. No question you're going to beat this thing. This event is called You Shop, We Give, May 18th through May 25th. I think you're right. The best way to do it is go online, imals.org/you. Is that the letter U or Y-O-U?
Y-O-U.
Y-O-U slash shop and find out.
Actually, that's dash shop.
Oh, dash shop. So easy for me to find. All right.
Yeah.
Let's do it again. imals.org/you-shop or hyphen.
You got it.
Check out the stores that are doing it, because this is the week to buy, because they'll be making a donation. And believe me, ALS needs all the support it can get for research, for cure, for the patient. These organizations, certainly ALS Turner, I know, gives tremendous support to the families. Just amazing. You guys continue on with the valiant battle and the great work that you're doing. Brian, good health to you. Lori, thanks for all that you do. And hey, it was nice reuniting after so many years since high school. You guys have gotten older. I have not. Thank you very much.
You're the best, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, guys. Be well. Talk to you soon. That is I Am ALS. Check them out as well. Brian and Lori Andre. Thanks, guys. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paulisnick.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes and tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.